Again, it's called Love and Logic. There are two different books that you can purchase from loveandlogic.com or different places that will help you understand this a little more in depth. They are basically the same. It's just you choose one based on the age of your children. One is Parenting the Love and Logic Way, and one is Love and Logic Birth through 6 years old for early childhood. The concepts are the exact same throughout the book. They just give different examples based on where you are, whether you're dealing with homework issues and scheduling sporting events and cleaning up rooms, or you're dealing with temper tantrums and falling on the floor because they didn't get their sippy cup. So examples are just the only thing that really vary. The concepts are the same in both books, okay? So those are some things that you can go and get. But kind of the round one that we talked about it during the parenting summit is kind of going brain dead. It's a reminder to you guys to go brain dead that less is more. The less we talk as parents, the more we're making our children think. And that is our goal, is to have thinking adults, not that you've pounded everything that they need to do from when they wake up to when they go to bed. Our goal is to have them to be able to think for themselves, be able to figure out what consequence is going to happen with their words, with their actions, with not doing something, for example, not turning in an assignment or not studying for a test. What are those consequences that are going to happen? So with the goals of trying to get them to be thinking adults, we have to get them to become thinking children. This is when we practice things, is when they're children. So we're going brain dead. We're not talking as much. And sad to say, moms, this is going to be so much harder for you than it is for dad. It's just built into our nature to want to talk it through and analyze it and discuss it. And that's much harder for us. We have to learn to zip it. And that's what we need to do the most. And then pick a phrase, a one-liner that works for you, that will make you feel comfortable. It's going to feel silly in the beginning, but you have to pick a word or a phrase that you are going to have just your go-to standard one-liner. Mine is "Oh, stars." And you need to just be able to use that in an empathetic way. You need to deliver the sympathy first to help your child get them to understand and have that relationship before you deliver the consequences. That removes you from being the bad guy if you do it in that order. If you show empathy and sympathy first, then the consequence is a natural consequence of what the child did. So the consequence is what the child is learning, but you're not the bad guy delivering the punishment. Okay? So it can be your one-liners can be, "Oh man, dude, that's a bummer, how sad," all different types of things that you can use. Just pick one that feels comfortable to you. Practice it when your kids are not around, so when you are ready to use it, it feels natural. You're going to feel silly working on it, but you have to get it practiced. You can't practice it in the heat of a moment. You've got to have that ready to roll off your tongue at any point in time. So any one of them will work, whatever you feel the most comfortable with, and just go from there. So kind of just a recap, go brain dead and use your empathetic one-liner all the time, as much as you can, okay? The rest of what we're going to talk about tonight is kind of part two. We're going to talk about not allowing your kids to get addicted to warnings. Perhaps you've done it. Perhaps you've heard it in a restaurant, in a grocery store, at Walmart or Target, where you are, "I told you to get over here, come here, I'm not going to tell you this again, come on," and you know this child's first and middle name, and you know everything that they've just been threatened with. "I'm going to take away your Thomas trains, you are not going to that party this weekend, you are not going to," you've heard this happen either in your own home or somewhere that you have been, where children only, they know how far they can go before their parent becomes serious. They know how enraged they can make their parent before the parent actually reacts. So if we can train them to react on our 7th warning or on our 21st warning, we can also train them to react on our first warning. So it just is going to take some effort, and it's going to take effort on your part that you're willing to go through and do this quickly. Our children will always need to come. They're always going to use whatever's worked for them in the past is what they're going to do in the future, okay? So if they know that they can cry for 25 minutes, they're always going to cry for 25 minutes. And if you're getting a little bit stronger, they'll go for 30. They don't mind. They'll go for 30 or 35. So however many warnings you have allowed and trained your child to get is how many warnings they're going to take. So when you go in and you completely alter and you confuse them because you're giving action on the first time and you've never done that in the past, that is going to be a big, big difference for them, and you're going to really catch them off guard. And that's not a bad thing. A confused child can't argue with you because they're trying to go, this isn't the normal behavior from mama. She's usually yelling and screaming at me, or dad is usually turning five shades of red at this point. And so when they're confused, they're not arguing, and then you can deliver your consequence very quickly, whether it's needing to go to their room or removing an object from them if they're fighting, whatever the situation is. As it says in this first box, set the limit once and follow through with loving consequences instead of lots of reminders and warnings. Now, the goal, again, is a loving consequence, and we have to, again, remember part one, rule number one, go brain dead, be quiet. The point of delivering the consequence is to allow the consequence to make the point to the child. It's not your lecture that you have pre-planned in your brain, and as great as it is, you can't give that. You can go give it in your bedroom by yourself, and you can just let all your steam out and let all your frustration out in a room by yourself. But issuing a lecture to your child, again, you become Charlie Brown's mom. Wah, 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 wah. They don't hear it. They just know they have to deal with it, and they're not listening to that. Now, they may be able to tell you what you said. If you say, did you hear me repeat what I said? They'll probably be able to tell you because they've heard it 500 times, and it's the same lecture. So they've kind of memorized it, and they know when you're about to get to the end and what's about to happen. There's a pattern that has been established. So what you're going to do is change the pattern. Is it going to be easy? No, not going to lie. Is it going to be fun? No. Will you confuse them, and will this work? Yes, if you stick to it. Okay, you have to be willing to put in the work to alter a pattern, to change a behavior that exists in your home or in your kids. With this no reminder approach, your children's ears will begin to grow, and they will begin to listen much better because they're going to know they said something and a consequence happened last time. They said something and a consequence happened. They're saying it once and I'm having to listen. They listen as well as we've trained them to listen. So it's going to be our job as parents to train them to listen on the first time, not the 7th or the 21st or the 50th. Okay? So with constant reminders, your child is being trained to ignore you. And if they're, I mean, subconsciously, that's not what you're intending to happen. That's really not your goal of talking to them and trying to remind them and teach them. But that's basically what happens. It also then defers outside the home, and you don't want that to happen in school, in classrooms with teachers, with coaches, with dance teachers, with piano teachers, or whatever it is that they do, soccer coaches. You don't want all of that to happen with other coaches. You want your child to listen on the first time so that they get playing time, they get the practice time that you're paying for, instead of having, I need you to listen to me. You don't want talking time going on. You want the activity that you're having your child in go on. In school, you want them to listen, to be respectful on the first time so that they will be able to get their work done correctly, follow the directions, and be able to have the rewards of that. Full recess time, extra computer time in the classroom because they've completed their work on time. Those are the goals that you're trying to get, is to get your child to do the very best they can, do their personal best every time. Okay, so being able to listen and follow directions on the first time, that's a parent dream, that's a teacher's dream. And so those are the goals that we're going to work towards. Our children will always need the same number of warnings that we give them. And so what we need to do is we need to change our mindset and our hearts to say we have a one warning situation now. We're not going to do multiple warnings anymore. I'm going to have to say something once. I'm going to make the comment, make the statement, and then I'm going to follow through with the action on that. Okay? And all of us are going to want to go, I really don't want to punish them. I really, really don't. But I've got to, because they've got to learn. And the more that they learn, the quicker they learn now at a younger age, a direction was given, a consequence follows. It's going to make their life much easier when they're a teenager, when they're in early adulthood and when they're starting in their jobs, because you have to listen to your boss. You have to do what you're asked to do. It has to be completed on time. It has to do all of these things. You have to do your part in a team project. All of these things are life skills. This is not just to make your life better as a parent. This is to teach the child something for when they are adults and out on their own. Okay, so the goal is to get them to be successful adults, ultimately, and we're going to do that making their listening skills sharper, following directions on the first time. That just, in general, will make their lives a whole lot easier and a lot less stress involved in yours. Okay, can we watch that first one? We got a quick little video here just to kind of give you, you'll see. It'll just kind of give you the concept of learning what happens with the different ways to talk to children.
A to raise kids who'll behave even when we're not watching them. Wouldn't that be nice if you could have kids that when they're in the backseat of the car and they're 16 years of age, they behave even when there isn't any adults around? Is that a good goal? I didn't hear you.
Yeah,
absolutely. Can we watch them all the time? No! So how do we accomplish this? And this really is the goal of Love and Logic. To create kids who have a little voice in their head that's always asking, wow, I wonder what the consequences of this next decision are going to be. And I wonder how my behavior is going to affect my life and, of course, the lives of others. Kids who have self-control. That's our dream. Now let's take a look at two little kids, and they've just decided to experiment with something naughty, new, and incredibly exciting. And what is that? Well, how about if we make it throwing wads of wet toilet paper at each other in the bathroom? Of course, they only hit 1 out of 5. The rest of it goes where? On the ceiling and on the floor and on the wall, and you hear giggling. Now, as a parent, when you're walking by the restroom and you hear giggling,
it's never good.
Quiz, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Probably not a very good thing. So let's take a look at two different parents handling this very same situation. And both parents have read that you have to have logical consequences, and both parents love their kids and want their kids to be responsible. So here we go. Parent A. What? What are you guys doing? Don't. You guys ever get that lecture when you're a kid? This is not a toy. You ever get that? This is not a toy. What do you think? That's a toy? Toilet paper is not a toy. What were you thinking? You're gonna get this cleaned up. I mean it. Here's parent B. Ooh. What's the parent thinking right now? Don't say what you want to say. It's okay to just be stupid. Ooh. Oh.
What?
Don't know. Solid. Oh man, guys, what a mess. Now suddenly this parent realizes that they were going to take the kids to Disneyland. As a parent of young kids, I was suddenly thinking, ooh, I was going to take these, and I never intended to take them there in the first place, but it sounds good, right? Ooh. Ah, such a mess, and I was gonna take you guys to the water park.
Water park, yeah, water park.
Ah, but now we won't have time. Hang in there. Got some work to do. Which kid is developing? Which set of kids is developing this logic? Okay, and I'll tell you the logic. Now, which kid? The first set of kids or the second set of kids? Which one? Which ones are developing this logic? Well, I haven't said it yet.
You know what? What? When we really do naughty things and we misbehave and stuff, it makes our parents really mad. And next time, let's not get caught. Now, which one? The first or second set? How about which one's developing this logic? Oh, man. You know, when we do stuff like this, makes our lives stink. Which set? The second, which one do you want for your kids? So as we've learned, the way we make this happen is what? With empathy. See, one benefit of empathy is it allows us to remain the good guy, and the consequence of the bad guy. Another benefit of it is that it allows the kids to stay in thinking mode instead of being so defensive, so they can learn. But another benefit is it teaches what? Self-control. Because the kids cannot blame us for their poor decision. And what do you want your kids to learn? That misbehaving makes other people mad? Or that misbehaving causes their lives to be really, really sad? Which one's going to work best for you? Now, another benefit of empathy, the one that I just love is every time we use empathy with a kid, we teach it. It's contagious. So every time we use empathy with them, we teach them to use it with us when we're old. It ups the odds that we'll end up in a nice nursing home. And you know, I really saw this with my son. And by the time he was 3 years old, he'd heard, "That is so sad," thousands of times. And I realized how well he'd learned this one day when I'm watching a video that was made of my father back in the 80s. And little Marky runs in. I said, "Hey, little Marky, check it out, it's Crump the Gym." And only like a 3-year-old can do, he looked at the TV, turned around, and said, "Not Crump the Gym." I said, "Yes, it is. Look closer. Listen to it. It sounds just like it. Look at it real close." He turns around again. He turns back and looks at me. His eyes are huge. And he says this, "That is so sad." And then he said, "That's Grandpa Jim before his hair popped off."
Okay. So, does that help you see a little bit more of the point of issuing the empathy first and how the children are going to respond to you? Because your goal is to make their decision, their choice, the bad guy. They've got to learn from their choices, and our goal is to get them to learn from their choices when they're much smaller and the consequences of their choices are much smaller. We don't want them learning important consequences at 16 and 18 when they're out and driving cars and when they're making bad choices with friends out with drugs or alcohol. We want them to practice the ability to understand consequences now when the price tag of each consequence is at a much smaller price. But the concept is the same. So when they learn the value of understanding consequences, it doesn't matter how old they are, they're going to fully understand that concept that everything I say or do has a consequence. And we need to make good choices, and our consequences will follow, okay? The three E's of love and logic are example. Kids are going to listen only so much. They can only take in so much verbal. They watch all the time. You know your kids. You see them imitating you, both in your words, in actions, and things that they're doing around the house. They want to be like mom and dad. They want to do the things you guys are doing. So when you are using love and logic, and when you are showing empathy, when you're showing it in your voice, when you are giving them role models around the house of, "Hey, we need to do some chores. Can you help me make it?" Not that chores are fun, but they still need to be done, and getting them involved in helping you with chores is going to be a much better thing than just barking orders at them. Clean up your toys, clean your room, make your bed, do this. You're showing them how to do it. They learn by example. So whatever you want your child to do is the way that you need to do it in your home and the way that you need to set an example for them also. And kids also learn more from other kids. So if you have an older one who is doing what you want, then just let your younger one watch that, because they will also they'll listen to and follow older siblings, older cousins, that kind of thing. They'll do that a whole lot more than they'll do adults. Experience, we talked a little bit about that. Mistakes made early in life are far more affordable than mistakes made later on. And empathy, it allows kids to learn from their mistakes. Anger allows them to blame us. We know adults who can't accept responsibility for everything that they've said and done. They grew up being able to blame others. They play the blame game. It's always someone else's fault, never our fault or their fault for what happened to them. And that certainly is not what you want your child to do when they grow up. You want them to be able to accept the responsibility, understand the consequences, and self-monitor, self-regulate, be in self-control. Okay? Mistakes will be made. We're human. They're kids. It's going to happen. And our goal is to get them to understand affordable versus unaffordable. So what we're going to do is pray they make as many mistakes as they can when they're little, so that we can use love and logic on them with everything. We spit out our food. We hit our sibling. We kick the dog. We did, you know, whatever it might be. We started acting up and acting ugly throughout the dinner table, whatever it might be. We want them to make mistakes so that we can use love and logic and teach them. And again, these are affordable mistakes versus unaffordable. I'm going to give you a quick second. I've just kind of written out some things right here of what would be affordable or unaffordable mistakes. And then maybe you could write on the next few lines, the next five lines, some mistakes that you think in your personal, and these are just kind of some generic ones, but you could write some mistakes that you want your child to learn that would become affordable or unaffordable. Just going to give you maybe about 4 minutes, 3-4 minutes to just kind of work on this, work through this list, and create your own mistakes that you kind of hope your children make so that they can learn. Okay, just another minute to kind of finish real quick. We'll run through them. This is something that you can work on at home. This is something that, you know, you can still put a list together of things that you want them to learn, how, and so that you can, in your mind, be prepared when a situation comes up. How am I going to handle that? Because the more you think out in advance, when no emotion is involved on your behalf, the better that you're going to react to that situation. So pre-planning as a parent, and I know that's not something that is normally said to parents, pre-plan things, and but have one-liners worked out. Feel comfortable saying them. Practice going brain dead and just saying, oh man. Practice understanding what you're going to do when your child goes to the floor in the toy aisle of the grocery store throwing a fit and everyone is looking at you. Practice what's going to happen in your own mind. Run through that scenario so that when it happens, you're going to your long-term memory, you're going to pull that out and figure out what's going to happen, and you're not going to go on just raw emotion at that time. Okay, breaking a toy. Affordable or unaffordable? Affordable. Very affordable. Okay, they break something. Consequences is they are going to have to pay for that. They can pay for that by doing extra chores around the house to help pay that person back. If it's their own toy, then it's just broken and gone. If it is a sibling's toy or a friend's toy that has been brought into the home, then they need to pay for that. They can pay for that by doing extra chores, and then they can do that, or they can pay for that by giving that person one of their own toys that is not broken. So they're going to have to pay for that somehow. They got to have some skin in the game. They have to realize that there's a cost to breaking things. And so however you want to work that out in your home is fine. Refusing to eat dinner, affordable or unaffordable? They will not die by breakfast. It is okay if they do not eat dinner. And y'all can decide whatever you want to do in your home, but in my house, I am not a restaurant. I cook dinner, and everybody can eat dinner. If you don't want to eat what's on the table, that's fine. The next meal will be at breakfast. And I'm not going to get up and cook for three different boys everything that they want. If they want to fix it themselves, they're welcome to do that, but I cook dinner, and we eat at this time, and that's what we have. They can choose to eat or not eat. Three teenage boys usually eat, and then some. So that's usually not so much of a big one in my house, but, you know, it's just one of those things you have to figure out. Are you going to give in to every little thing? Or are you going to set some guidelines, and we're going to follow the rules? Getting out of a car seat, is that affordable or unaffordable? unaffordable. That is a safety issue. That is not acceptable. That is not okay. They cannot get out of their car seat while the car is moving, while the engine is on. And those are some rules. Do they master how to unbuckle the car seat? Yeah, they're quick. They're quick studies. You know those little guys can get out of that. But that is something you're instantly, you pull the car over, you were back in there. We talk about that. That is not okay. So that is something, because when they are driving, you want that seatbelt on. You know that that protects their life. So that's an unaffordable thing. Totaling the tricycle on the lawn, that's affordable. Painful, but affordable. The bike can be replaced, relatively inexpensive monies. They might have skin knees, road rash, something like that, but that's very affordable. Totaling the car at age 16, that could be a whole lot worse. Damage to the car, potential damage or death to them, or whoever is in another vehicle that they hit. So that is very, very unaffordable. That's why we want to make sure that we are doing everything that we can to teach them safety and driving skills and that kind of thing. Running into the street, unaffordable. They don't have the ability to go left, right, left, okay, I'm clear, and then to run into the street. So that, again, is a safety issue. We won't run through all of these, but just understand that those are some things that you can teach in your home. What is something, affordable mistake, I want them to make so I can teach the lesson? What is an unaffordable mistake that I really want them to teach because that is a safety or a character or moral issue, and you can drill that home. So both types of mistakes are important to make. It's how you handle it and what you're going to teach from it, okay, and how you'll do that. I hope you wrote down some, or maybe tonight or in the next near future, you guys can figure out what mistakes you're hoping your child makes so that they can learn something that they need to learn in your life. Everyone will have different scenarios based on the individual children. You may have multiple children in your home, and the different children are going to need to make different mistakes so that they can learn, okay? Avoiding power struggles. Anyone ever argued with a three-year-old? Anyone ever won an argument with a three-year-old? We don't win. They have more stamina, more determination than we do. The thing about power struggles is they realize that they've got you. And they want you. They want you to engage in that power struggle with them because they want the fight to continue, no matter if there are accruing consequences and punishments from that. It doesn't matter. They've got you. They realize that they've hit your last nerve. They realize that you have no more parenting skills left because you are yelling and screaming. And they realize, I just won. I have made my parents so angry. I have turned their faces red. I have seen the bulging veins. I have seen them stomp around, throw things, slam doors, whatever it might be. I won because I made them angry. And they're very good at this. So in order to avoid this, we are going to share control. Now, this sounds silly. The more control you share, the more control you as the adult have. Okay, that sounds a little bit backwards right now, and I know that, but let's go through this and see if we can get it to make sense. The more control we share, the more we have. The less weak control that we share, the less we're ultimately going to have because we're engaging in power struggle after struggle after struggle. We can either share control with our kids on the terms, or we can force our kids to take it. Either way, it's going to happen. Your goal is to partner with your kids, not to fight with your kids. So what you want to do is share as much control as you can. This means giving choices all day long to the point of you're going to feel like I am nauseated if I come up with one more choice for my child. Do you want to have eggs or waffles? Now, understand before we even go into this, every choice you give your child, two options and two options only. Door three is not an option. And always they are going to try to ask for door three in the beginning. It's not an option. Two options and two options only. And both of those options that you give your child are A-OK with you. You're not going to go make omelets for breakfast just because they say omelets. You're OK with making scrambled eggs or oatmeal. And those are okay. So those are the two choices you give. Both are healthy. Both are going to fill them up. Both are going to get them ready for their day. But if they go to the omelet, that's not a choice. If the child does not choose within 10 seconds, you choose for them. They've got to learn the practice making a decision and sticking with it. The hard part, some of these who aren't real good at sticking with their decision, I'll choose oatmeal. And then you start making the oatmeal and you put it on the table. Oh, I want eggs. I want eggs now. I want scrambled eggs. I want scrambled eggs. Oh, I'm sorry. Tomorrow that can be a choice for you again tomorrow, but today you chose oatmeal, so here it is. So they've got to understand that even when I make a decision, I have to stick with that decision. And the consequence of making that decision is I chose oatmeal, I got oatmeal. Now tomorrow, if I really want eggs, I just realize I'm going to have to choose eggs because I chose oatmeal, she made me eat it. So tomorrow, if I really want eggs, I need to say eggs. We can't play this game of I want this, I'm going to cry, throw a fit, and then I'm going to change my mind and get what I really wanted. I made my parent do extra work. Okay, so two choices, only two. Both choices are A-okay with the parent. The child makes a decision. Once the child has made a decision, they stick with that choice. They don't get to change their choice.
What do you suggest if they want to choose of your two choices that you offer?
In 10 seconds, if they don't make a choice, you make the choice for them. They lost that opportunity of control at that point. And you'll tell them, they're like, we have 10 seconds, you make a choice, or mommy gets to make it for you today. You can practice making another choice later. 5, by the time I get to 1, you have to make a choice. 4, think real hard, I need you to make a decision or I make it for you. 2, and you're counting down, 1 final last chance, do you want to make a choice before mommy makes it for you? Okay, you didn't make it today, we're going to have oatmeal. Tomorrow you get to make a decision again. Are they going to be upset? Yes, but they're going to learn the value of making choices. You gave them opportunity, you gave them clear options, and if they don't, and they're going to have to learn to make choices throughout their life. So that's what we're going to do. Two choices, both okay with a parent. They get to make a choice. When they make their choice, they stick with that decision. And if they don't make it within 10 seconds, then you are going to make it for them. Now, do you think if you make a choice for them, the next time you give them a choice, they're going to make a decision a little bit quicker? Yeah, because they know these are now my choices. I make it or my parent makes it. And I want to have control. If you think about a child's life, we kind of tell them when to get up, when to go to bed. Pretty much the only thing that they have control over are their bowels. When I go to the bathroom, and that's on their time. But who I have a play date with, what school do I go to, if I go to church, when breakfast is, what I'm eating for breakfast, what am I going to wear, who am I going to see today, do we have to go to the Walmart, are we going to Target, are we staying home all day, does mommy do laundry? Everything in their world is pretty much in preschool is told to them. And a lot of kids, especially if you have already realized you have a strong-willed child, love and logic is fantastic for strong-willed children because the one thing they want is control. You give them as much control as possible on these little simple decisions. Do you care if it's oatmeal or eggs? No. On the big decisions that you care about, you're going to be, haven't I given you a lot of decisions today? Yes, you got to decide this and this and this. Remind them, yes, this is a decision that mommy has to make right now. I'm going to decide this, but I'm going to give you the next time a decision can be made and you can decide it, I'm going to let you do that. But this is a mommy decision or a parent decision. This is a grown-up decision that I have to make for you. And you just do that. I mean, sometimes you can't give a choice in every situation, but you give as many choices as possible throughout the day. So when you do have to take that control and say, this decision needs to be made by a grown-up right now, they're going to be a little more willing for you to just have one decision when they've already had 50. Okay? We're going to read two books tonight. Which two would you like to read before bedtime? They get to go pick the two out. You don't care. You said two. That's the rule. They've chosen two. Do you want to take your bath right now or do you want to take your bath in 10 minutes? Now, you've asked this question 10 minutes early, so it doesn't really matter if they want to go to bed, get a bath 10 minutes early, or get a bath on time. They don't know it's 10 minutes early. Do you want to take your bath now, or you want to take your bath in 10 minutes? 10 minutes, great. That's a regular time, so we're going to go do it then. Would you like to have bubbles in your bath today, or do you want to have your bath toys for tonight, or whatever you do in your bath time? Do you want to, it's cold outside, would you like to wear your jacket, or would you like to carry your jacket? Would you like to carry your jacket? Mom, it's not you having it on your arm or sticking it in a bag and you end up with it. Would you like to wear your jacket or would you like to carry your jacket? The jacket is going to the store or into the school or into the car because it's cold outside and you need that. Some kids are just hot-blooded and don't get as cold as we might as quickly. So they've got a jacket for when they do get cold. So those are things that you can give them choices about. I need to make your lunch for school today. Would you like to have a turkey sandwich or a ham sandwich? You have turkey in the fridge. You've got ham in the fridge. Doesn't matter. Whatever they choose, they have to eat at school. Okay? So things like that, give them as many choices because they feel that they have some control over their life. Then when a big one comes, you're like, I give you as many choices as I can. But this one needs to be made by mommy or by daddy right now, and this is going to be the decision. As soon as I can, I'll let you help me make another one. And they're like, oh, okay, I have made a lot today. I mean, it really gives a big, big difference in avoiding and cutting out some power struggles in your home because you've given them things to feel that I'm participating in my own life, and it really helps them out. When kids feel powerless, they will do one of several things. They're going to develop a hearing loss when you need them to listen. I have boys. I call it selective hearing. And they do that. They try to do that frequently. Now, I'll test them and say, oh, I'm sorry. I was going to give you that $50 prize. And they're like, what? I'm like, oh, you can hear. Great. Now we're going to do what we need to do. And, you know, they have selective hearing, and you don't want that. So by giving them choices throughout the day, they tend to listen to you more because most of what you're asking them throughout the day is going to be choices they want. Instead of just, go do this, instead of barking orders and commands at them, they're involved in making that decision. Experiencing memory loss when you want them to remember. You never told me that I had to do that. I don't remember hearing that. Well, you have to take a bath every day, or you have to do your homework every night when you come home from school. This is not a surprise. This is not a news flash. This is, you know, you can't tell me you didn't know you had to do this. The muscular paralysis when you're in a hurry. When they pull the wet noodle routine and fall flat to the ground and they weigh three times as much when you're trying to pick them up and they are just like this all over the place. If you give them choices, we have to leave in 10 minutes to go to church. Would you like to get in the car by yourself or would you like me to help you when it's time to go? And they get to make a decision. You need them in the car. You need them to leave on time. And this is these things, giving the power, avoiding the power struggles and giving the choices helps take the chaos out of your mornings. I don't know about you, but sometimes my mornings can be completely chaotic to try and get everybody to schools and be where they need to be. And sometimes it can just be crazy. So giving them choices allows them to take a little bit of the mayhem out of your morning. It's a little bit easier to do all of that. They are going to become defiant and aggressive if they don't have some control in their life. They're going to take the control in a negative way, and they're going to be aggressive, whether it's to their siblings, to the neighborhood kids, to the pets in your home. They're going to become aggressive somehow because they're feeling out of control. I have nothing. They're going to take it and use that desire for control in a negative way. Okay, that is absolutely not what you want. Or they're going to try and do the exact opposite of what it is that you're asking. Con, what you're doing, avoid power struggles by making deposits in their emotional savings account. The more deposits we can make will help balance out when we need to make a draw, a withdrawal. A withdrawal in an emotional savings account is one of those big things where you say, this is not a decision you get to do. This is a mommy decision or a daddy decision, and we have to make this one for you. But the next time that I can allow you to make a decision, that's what you have to. So you, every time you're allowing them to make a decision, whether it's, here's your cup, do you want it this full or this full? Do you really care? No. But they care because they got to make a choice in their life. Do you want the red sippy cup or the blue one? Doesn't matter to you. They're both clean, both sitting in the cupboard. Let them choose. Do you want to have asparagus? We're having asparagus tonight. Do you want to have that grilled, or would you like me to steam that for you? I'm grilling hamburgers and hot dogs. I could grill asparagus, or I could throw it in a pot and I could steam that for you. He's eating asparagus. Does it matter whether it's grilled or steamed? Not really. You've already got the grill fired up for the rest of the dinner. Allow them to make as many choices in their world. And it'll sound silly, and that's why I said by the end of the day, you're going to be like, can I choose not to make a choice? And that's going to be the parent side of all of this. But the child is, mom and dad allow me to make choices. I must be good at this. I'm feeling confident. It's a respect thing. And then when you come to them and say, buddy, I've got to make this decision for you because it's an important one. Whatever that could be, a character one, a moral one. We have to get up at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning because we have to go to the airport because we have to catch a plane. That's not optional. I know you don't normally get up until 8:30, but we have to get up at 6 and leave. Those are the big decisions that I'm talking about where they don't get to choose. Okay? Those are, yes?
For all these meal choices with multiple children, uh-huh. Do they have a day or do they, I mean, because they all can't, all four can't pick. So is Monday somebody's day or do you do parts of the meal each Wednesday or?
Oh, that's a good question. If you have, everybody will want something different. But if you're giving a decision of, we're having hot dogs tonight, what would you like on your hot dog? Would you like chili on your hot dog? Would you like just mustard on your hot dog? It's all on the table. It doesn't matter if they only select one condiment out of the four or five you have. Their hot dog is made the way you want it. Do you want it in the bun or out of the bun, just on the plate by itself? Doesn't really matter to you. But again, you've got the control because you're making hot dogs for your family, but if this one wants no bun and to dip in mustard, and this one wants ketchup, mustard, relish, chili, onions, everything on it, it doesn't matter. They're both happy, and you still have the control of these condiments are out on the table. These are the choices that you have. Yes, again, you don't. No, you're not getting pizza, and you're getting hot dogs, and you're getting, uh-uh. I cook one meal, and within that, you may have your decisions. Yes. You could, and if it's okay, you know, you throw that in the microwave for a couple minutes, and that's okay. But the end result, yes, you've already got the grill on because you're making hamburgers and hot dogs, and while you're doing everything else, you could steam two or three pieces for the other one to eat. You still have asparagus going into their bodies, and it took 30 seconds while you're doing everything else, so it didn't take that much effort, and then they're both eating asparagus, and they're both happy. They both got the control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they both got to do. Now, I'm not talking about, okay, the spaghetti with marinara sauce and spaghetti with all, you know, and we make five different types of pasta. I mean, we're having this, and you get the choices within the realm of asparagus, steamed or grilled. Now, if you're not turning on the grill, if asparagus is going with something else, and the grill will not be on, then that's not even an option that night. Would you like to have it cut, or would you like to cut it yourself, or would you like me to cut it? Those are the choices that you can give at that point. If there are no options for preparation, would you like to cut it yourself or would you like me to cut it? If you don't care one time, if he picks it up and eats it with his fingers, he's eating asparagus. Who cares? I mean, at that point, who really cares? So those are the different kind of things that I'm saying. Look at every little situation within your world, within your home, and try to give as many choices as possible within that realm so that you're not creating extra work for yourself. You're not doing something extra or different. They're still having to follow the family rules and still staying within the family realm, but they have choices, each child within. Okay? Guidelines for sharing control. This is our last page. When things are going well, make lots of deposits in the form of small choices, the things we've been talking about. For each choice, only two options. Either one is okay with you. These are just kind of the rules. Give the choices before resistance. See, here's the key. You got to set it up first. When the child starts screaming and having a fit, they've already gone into what's called brainstem mode, where they reach way down to the back of the caveman type part of your brain that they are already screaming, you know, wet noodling on the floor. You can't reason with that lump of flesh on the floor. There's no reasoning involved there. You must wait for that emotion to end and for sanity to return. So what you're doing is you are giving choices before the fit starts, before the power struggle begins. It's dinner time. We're going to eat in 5 minutes, and you give those choices. We're getting in the car my car leaves at 7:45 to go to school. Would you like me to carry you to the car, or would you like to walk to the car to yourself? Would you like to wear your coat in the car? Would you like to carry the coat to the car? Those are the choices that they're getting. But you're giving those choices before the argument starts, because you can't give them once it starts. Once the fit has begun, there's no negotiating whatsoever. That's when it's just, some bedroom time. They're up there, they're in their bedroom, they're put away, they need to calm down and regain some sanity before you can have a discussion. You can't argue with an adult who's angry. You can't argue with a child who's angry. There is no ability. You have to wait for emotion to be removed and then have a discussion. Okay? Again, if your child does not decide within 10 seconds, you decide for them. This allows them the ability to realize they have to make a choice, even if it's difficult for them. It gives that ability to practice that. Because when they are teenagers, and when someone says, hey, you want to try this, and they don't have that ability to make a decision, chances are they're going to accept whatever pill or drug or drink is being given to them because they have not practiced, no, I don't. Thanks for offering. And when they have had the ability to practice 1,000 times in their life to say, no, yes, I'm making choices, and they get better at it, then they can make it a choice faster. And you need a fast decision when we're talking about drugs and alcohol in high school. No, I don't want that. That doesn't even need to be we don't need to analyze, because when they see something like that, the person who has that is going to come in and attack on that and push them to do it. So you need a quick no. I don't do that. Thanks for offering. I'm going to the other room, I'm leaving the party, whatever it might be, okay? So you need them to be able to make quick choices, and the more you can get them to do that and practice that, the better off they're going to be. Use care not to disguise threats as choices. Don't use it kind of in a backhanded way. Do you want to go to the park, or do you want to sit here and get 5 spankings? That's not a choice. That's not a choice. And really, neither of those are okay with you. They need to be okay choices within the situation. We would want to go to the park today, but we have some homework. You think we could go to the park for 30 minutes and then come home and do homework? Or would you like to do homework first and stay at the park for 45 minutes? Those are controllable choices. They know they've got a shorter time at the park if they go there first, or they can get their homework done and they can spend a longer time at the park. Those are choices that they get to make, but do not use threats of punishment or things in a negative way as one of the two choices. They need to be both acceptable choices that the child would want to choose from, okay? Do not throw threats in there. Let's see. We've got a few minutes. Let's take a couple of this while I get our next video ready. Let's take a couple minutes and you guys see if you can come up with some effective choices that you might want to offer at home. What happens in your world in the morning getting ready for school? Or when you're getting ready to work to take to daycare? What happens in the mornings that could make your life a little easier if a power struggle did not exist? Getting out of bed, getting to breakfast on time, getting dressed, knowing where all the backpack and the homework is. How do you get them to brush their teeth? How do you get them to not sit in front of the TV and get their stuff done from school? What happens in your world that you would like to change? Some choices that you could now give to remove that argument tomorrow morning. What are some things that you could do? And the first couple times you do this, they're going to be so confused. They're going to do it surely out of obedience because they're like, I don't know, I'm expecting the argument. It'll be really funny to watch their faces the first time you try this because you're going to throw them off guard with this. And you're remaining calm and you're like, would you like this or this? And they're ready for, you know, Monday morning monster to come out and start, you know, their thing. And when you don't do that, it's very confusing. So what are some things in your world that you as parents could offer as choices in your morning, in your afternoon schedule, whatever it might be, that would make your world a little bit easier, that you could write down on these things? And I will get our video ready. Then we'll, oh, he passed it off. Look at that. Thank you. Then we're going to have discussion time. Computer skills are really not one thing that God gave me the talent for. You left this on. Oh, there it is. Very good. Yes.
In one of our big things, like, they don't put things where we can find it. So how would you do that? Like, you can put your shoes up tonight, or in the morning, mommy's going to pick where you're going to have to. I mean, how would you?
So they hide them around the house instead of putting them back in the spot where they go. They just forget to put them.
They're in their car.
So they're not in a normal place. Okay. In the evening, I would ask them, would you like to get your shoes together now, or would you like me to pick for you in the morning which shoes you're going to wear, because we don't have time to hunt for them. So I would do that in the evening and say, would you like to get them together and make the hunt occur in the evening before they have to go to bed so that they're ready to get dressed in the morning. And then outside of the time of getting ready, that could be something like, you know, if you would put your shoes, your favorite shoes, back in your closet, we would know where they are and you would always be able to wear them. But when one's in the car and one's in the bathroom and one's in the backyard and we have to spend time finding things, you're not always going to be able to wear the ones that you want to. You're going to have to wear the ones that mommy can find for you. So if you really want to wear shoes, you need to make sure you know where both of them are before we go to bed. That conversation is handled at a different time than the chaos of the morning. But I would, if it's finding things, I would definitely, that would be an evening activity for me, so that you don't have that in the morning. Anyone want to share some quick suggestions? Because there really could be someone else who's struggling with how to make a choice out of a certain situation in the morning. Anything you guys are going to work on?
Like after dinner, they have a choice on free time. And they always make a mess. And it's not necessarily like they're taking out all the toys. It's just they move the cushions from the furniture, and they, you know, they start just putting things out of order. And then at the end, like, I don't know how to give them a choice of what to do there.
Like, free time, if that happens after dinner, during dinner, before it's over and everyone's left the table, is that what you call it, free time? They know it's free time. Okay, during free time tonight, I know you guys like to do a lot of rearranging, but I'll give you a 5-minute warning and you need to put everything back. Whatever is not put back tonight will not be allowed to be used tomorrow. And that way you've removed whatever they were not respectful of. Toys left out of a toy box. They're not cleaning things up. Would you like to clean up your toys by yourself? Or would you, I'll clean up. If I keep what I clean. Whatever I pick up, I get to keep. That means you don't see your toy again. So how important is your toy? And it's in a bag in the garage hidden. They don't know. It's just gone. They've lost the privilege of that toy because they weren't respectful enough to put things away. And, you know, just as a reminder, 5 minutes before free time is over, okay, guys, free time's almost over. We need to go ahead and start putting our things away so that you can be able to use all of the items again tomorrow. Whatever is left out is going to not be part of free time tomorrow. We're going to lose privileges of that. See if you can get them to help do it and make it in a fun way. You know, hey, let's all work together. We said we have 5 minutes. Kids love timers. They love to be the fastest one. So use that. It's 5 minutes till free time, but how fast can we clean our stuff up? If we do it in 2 minutes instead of five, then you've got an extra 3 minutes to play. So let's see how fast we can all do it together. Put that egg timer on. Turn that microwave clock on and let them see. Put it on your phone and let it see. We're at 1 minute. Hurry, hurry, hurry. I mean, get them involved in that. They love to do fast to prove who's the quickest and the fastest. They love timers and stuff like that. Oh, sorry. Okay.
It's not related to like the free time, but my daughter, she leaves her clothes out the night before, and then in the morning she, her mom goes off and she gets up and she gets herself dressed. And it takes her hours to put her clothes on. I mean, just forever to put her clothes on. And she's the opposite about the timer. If I mention a timer, it's like, I mean, she's scared to death of it. I don't know why. I mean, we've got the turnover one.
Right, the egg timer?
Uh-huh.
She doesn't like that. Then whenever she gets herself up, I would just say, when the clock reads 6:45 or whatever time it is, you need to be downstairs for breakfast, whether you're dressed or not. Or you need to be in the car at 7:15, whatever your departure time is. You're going to school in whatever you have on. If it doesn't match, or if you're at one shoe, if they're half-dressed, you're calling the teacher to say, I know that this has happened, and I'm making a point. It'll be better tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, you need to call that teacher and let whoever else is involved in that world and get them to understand, because my mom made me go two different shoes. I was trying to decide. Oh, get that teacher to say, well, tomorrow morning you'll make a quicker decision, won't you? You need that teacher's help to reinforce what you're doing. But, you know, if she hates timers, just give her the end time. You must be completely done with breakfast. You must be dressed in whatever you're wearing. You need to have whatever your thing is you need done. And you need to be in the car. My car leaves at 7:15. That way she doesn't have things, and she may be good with a visual chart. Is she a visual learner by chance? I was going to say, I'd make a morning chart where she can see the pictures, and it's taped on her mirror or her door. Okay.
We actually use magnets and pictures that we address because she's five. She's pre-self-recapture.
Yeah.
We use pictures of breakfast.
Absolutely.
And your dishes away in the sink and feeding the dog.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And it worked for the longest time, and she was so proud of herself. And
good.
It's just like the light switch went off, and she just doesn't care anymore.
Change the pictures. Make the chart look different. If she does it for a couple days in a row, she gets a marble in a jar. Once every...
She gets nickels, and then on the weekend, you could go spend it on whatever she wants. She got like a princess wand.
Okay.
And it just, for some reason, that lost its allure, and I don't know.
Yeah, well, extrinsic rewards only should be used very temporarily just to get a new process going. Your goal is to be intrinsically done. I'm proud of myself for doing what I know I have to do, because an external reward is just the beginning of a process to get it new and get them excited about it. But the goal is to take that extrinsic, because you're going to be buying princess wands and then you're going to be buying princess cars. So that extrinsic reward is just going to increase as they age. So you want to remove that extrinsic reward as quickly as possible and transfer that over to, you have done such an amazing job, and give her a gift, an extra book at night. You get to help me make dessert for tonight. It doesn't even have to be something you go purchase. I'm going to let you choose what I make for dessert tonight because you've done such an amazing job of getting yourself up and ready on time, and we've done so great. So you're choosing dessert tonight for the whole family to enjoy. You know, that kind of thing. It doesn't have to be a purchased item, but let it be an extra bonus. Kind of thing.
Wouldn't that tip you off to just say you can get yourself dressed if you're not ready, and when mommy comes in, your mom will get you dressed.
I will get you dressed. Mm-hmm. Yep, you could do that too. Absolutely, that could be another thing. You have until this time to get dressed on your own, or I do it for you. You know, if you have to go in and do it, then you're not speaking. You're just saying, "Uh-oh, how sad you didn't make that choice to do it yourself," and then you get her dressed. She'll get dressed quickly if she's a strong-willed and wants to do it on her own. Yeah. Yes.
Mine is regarding bedtime. I have a three-year-old boy, and he delays a lot, and so I find that I'm stressed out by the time that he actually gets into bed, and after all the delay tactics and the routine, and so I can't tell if it's the reason that it's getting worse and worse is because he wants control, or is it that he just doesn't want to go to bed?
Both. He wants control because he doesn't want to go to bed. You have to be willing to suffer through the next day. It takes a whole lot less energy to wake a child up than it does to put them to sleep. So let him tell him, if you don't want to go to sleep, I want you to stay in your room, have some bedroom time, and I want you to keep your eyes open and just look at your ceiling for as long as you can. Stay awake as long as you can. They're going to be exhausted the next day. Let him stay up as long as he can. You can't come out of your room. I don't want to hear you, and I don't want to see you. This is not, I want to drink, I want to go potty, that kind of thing. And again, you're going to have to get the people involved. If it's school-age children, you've got the school involved because they are going to be dead dog tired. But you let them go to sleep whenever they want, but we wake up at 6 o'clock. We wake up at 7 o'clock, no matter how tired you are.
You have no problem with that. He wakes up at 6:37 every day, regardless of what time he went to bed.
Oh, I know. I had one of those, too, when they don't need a lot of sleep. That is hard.
No.
I'll tell you this, it's great when you finally get into school because they're early risers and they don't need a lot of sleep, so they can stay up and do their homework. So it's a bonus when they get older. But right now, I know that you're like, oh, just sleep. After the tactic, I mean, it's a routine and it's put them back in bed. No talk, no communication, no eye contact. Boom, close the door. Boom, close the door. And you're going to have to fight it for a couple nights, but that's what you're going to have to do. Because the delay tactics are nothing more than that, and he knows he's got you because he sees your blood pressure raising. He sees you getting frustrated. In reality, he just won because you're not having a calm evening.
Throughout the day.
All day long. As much choices as you... Yeah, let him. Do you want to wear these pajamas or these pajamas? Do you want to brush your teeth first or do you want to put on your pajamas first? Do you want to read, which two books do you want to read? Do you want to sleep with your covers off or do you want your covers on? Do you want the nightlight on or off? Which animals do you want in your bed? Let them make as many choices. Okay, love you. Good night. I'll see you in the morning. This is when mommy has to make a choice. It's time for bed. And tell them, you just have to stay in here. You don't have to sleep right now, but you do have to stay in your room. And I don't want to see you or hear from you, and we get up at 6 o'clock. So long as he knows the rules, then he's going to have to suffer the consequences the next day, as you will because he's 3. But you're teaching him, I need to go to bed a little bit earlier. I need my sleep. And sometimes that's the hardest way. I just did that with my 8th grader this year. Fine, you want to go to bed? I have no problem with that. We get up at 6 o'clock because you've got to go to football practice, love. And about 2 nights of that, big dark circle bags underneath his eyes. He was like, I can handle it, because the older, you know, the high schoolers were staying up later to get their homework done. Didn't think he needed to go to bed. I'm like, you do. You're a 12-hour sleeper, have been since you were born, and didn't want to admit that. And a couple nights of staying up late with brothers and trying to do homework later, he goes to sleep on his own now. But we suffered through, and I wrote notes to his coaches in the morning, make him run. You bet I did. I made him get extra running time in when he was exhausted, and I was, football was so hard. Oh, that's so sad, honey, probably because you were so tired. Coach, I said, don't tell him, just make him run extra. And he just thought it was worse because he was tired. Little things they don't need to know about, it just helps them learn.
Our son is 8.5. Mm-hmm. Our biggest struggle right now is spelling words.
Mm-hmm. Because he think they're too hard?
It's hard to say because he won't even do that. Like, I'll say, you know, our normal routine is on Mondays and Tuesdays. We write them, and after that, we start quizzing throughout the week. And I'll say, okay, go write your spelling words 2 or 3 times. And he's thrown the papers at me. He's screamed at me. He's told me I'm frustrating him. So
give him different mediums. Don't just make him do it with a pencil. Colored pencils, markers, do it in chalk on a board. Get a whiteboard at your house. Let him write them on whiteboard. Spelling words go to music and patterns fabulously. Break them up in their syllables and clap out the syllables. And do that way, because depending on his learning style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
does the teacher doesn't issue any options? Just learn your spelling words. Here they are Monday. Take a test on Friday. And that's boring. Yeah, you're going to have to be creative.
But, like, how do I treat though the attitude? Because should I let him find you're going to fail on Friday because I don't really think he cares, or do I take away his video games?
He'll care when he fails the test on Friday and loses all privileges. This is your job, to learn your spelling words. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you're getting creative with options for learning the spelling words. Put colored pencils together with a rubber band and have him rainbow write them. So you get red, yellow, and purple all at the same time, and he's writing them in rainbow. He's doing them on marker. He's doing them on whiteboard. Throw down a tarp on your floor and a can of shaving cream, and he's spelling the words in shaving cream. It's tactile. It's, you know, it's easy to clean up. It smells great. If you have crayons on a table, shaving cream is the best thing to take markers and crayons off tables. That's fantastic. We use it at school every day, clean the tables. Let him write his spelling words that way. Let him spell his spelling words with beans, macaronis, anything that you have at home that's different than just sitting there on a piece of paper with our lines and spelling the words. Put it to music that you guys make up, make patterns for it. Clap it out, snap and clap and do that kind of stuff. Multiplication tables are fantastic that way too, because you can put math to rhythm and it will, it's so much easier. So you've got to come up and be creative, but he also has to realize his job, daddy's job is to go to work, mommy's job is to make sure everything gets done in the house and to take care of the kids, and your job is to do your very personal best at school, and that means the spelling words. Even they don't have to be fun for you, they just have to be your personal best, and here are consequences that will happen if you don't learn them and you don't get a good grade on the test. Now, 100, obviously, I mean, that's your goal, but yeah, exactly. I mean, and set that for him. This is the minimum that you should get on a test. He needs to know where he has to be because, you know, if he gets a 50, I got half right. Don't, you know, that's acceptable. So whatever is acceptable to you guys, set that bar, set that thing. So 8, 9, or 10 spelling words minimum you have to have 8 right. I understand some of these are big words. They give really big words in second grade. They do. It's a hard year for spelling words. Oh, sure.
Let it be a
shocker. Well, you could say some consequences might be loss of your of all your video, all screens. In my house, it's called all screens grounding, where you have no phone, no TV, no, there's nothing screen and plugged. It's all gone. That's all screens grounding at my house. And, you know, that could be an option. You never want to use food as a disciplinary thing. So I would find something else. If he loves to be outside with friends, oh, when you fail a test, how sad is that? I'm sorry that we're going to have to. The time that you could be spending playing with your friends, we're really going to have to work extra hard next week on getting your spelling grade up. And now we're also going to have to learn these words, how to spell these words, because you are going to have to know them. So not only do we have to learn next week's, but this weekend when you should be playing with your friends, that's so sad. We'll be working on spelling words because you have to know how to spell these words in our life. These are words we use all the time. So you can just throw some things out there. And then just let him ponder how bad that would be. It's okay to let him be a little fearful of consequences. It's okay. So whatever 2 or 3 would be, that way he knows some options and he can kind of navigate, I really don't like any of those, so I guess I better learn these silly spelling words. You know, but options within... If there's unacceptable behavior, there's unacceptable behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to learn the spelling words, and, you know, he's going to have math homework or geometry homework or AP U.S. history in the future, and he's not going to like. But we still have to do it because that's his job as the student. He has to do it. Now, outside of having to do work we don't like because we have to do things we don't like to do, we still can't go around slamming doors and that kind of thing. I understand if you get frustrated. Let's figure out what about spelling words frustrates you the most. How can we solve that? That's when you're talking when he's not frustrated. That's when you're having that conversation. You know, you used to not be frustrated, and all of a sudden you've got frustrated. Did the words get bigger? Maybe someone said something in class like, oh, my test score is always higher than yours. He may be having a wrong thought in his head and just assuming he can't do it. And you're just going to have to get to the root of why that started and figuring that out. But that has to happen when he's calm and when you are not studying the spelling words at that point. That happens at a totally separate time. Someone had, yeah. Right.
So she's crying and whatever. And I told her, well, you can either, if you don't, anyway, I said, if you want a snack, then you're going to walk onto the go, you know, after. And she did it, but she screamed the entire way.
It's all right.
You know,
she's doing what you want. She's walking.
Okay. I mean, is that acceptable that they're doing it in?
She's doing what you want. The hardest part for you is every other parent on that soccer field's looking at you. And you're like, we're learning how to walk. Sometimes we just have to practice. Just announce it to them what they're doing, and they'll all go, oh, because they've been there. So just announce, we're practicing how to walk by ourselves instead of being carried. You know, just, it's okay, throw it out there. And you're doing such a great job walking. Now, she may cry all the way, but she walked it, and next time she'll walk it again. And you just keep getting her to do that. Yes, sir. Yes. You can choose a different. That's a great point. No, if you deliver it with empathy every time, what you're doing is you're giving them that as a trigger of, uh-oh, here it comes. I'm not going to get what I want. Dad is saying, oh, that's so sad. They're going to learn that. But you cannot. Your worst enemy of love and logic is sarcasm. Your absolute worst enemy is sarcasm. Sarcasm does nothing for the person that's hearing it. Absolutely nothing. All it does is make the person who's saying the sarcastic comment happy for that instant moment. Sarcasm is an enemy of what you're trying to accomplish here. So you have to constantly deliver. The point of using the same one-liner over and over is it triggers the kids. They know what's going to happen when you say, "That's so sad." They know that means, man, I am not going to, it's not even worth the argument. I'm just going to stop now. I'm going to go do what he wants me to do because it's, he's not going to give in. That's so sad. Or, you know, dude, I don't know. Whatever you feel comfortable with, but it does have to be delivered every time, and you have to be conscious of not having it to sound sarcastic. Because when you deliver it with empathy and with love, it's a trigger for them to realize, every time he says this, he means this, and I'm not getting anywhere, so I have to do whatever, or I'm going to have my consequence. But that's going to be on you to make sure it's delivered empathetic and not sarcastically.
But isn't it once you said that, I mean, the consequence is already there? It's not like they can't say.
The one-liner is just, is yeah, the event has already occurred.
You can't just say, oh, okay, I'll go do it now.
Right. But if they're going to stand there and want to argue with you, and that's so sad. But you just didn't, but I did. That's so sad. By saying the same thing in the same way over and over, you're not engaging in their argument, and therefore you have taken control back by saying nothing to them, by not arguing with them, because they want you to engage them, and you're not. So you've gained the control of the argument by doing nothing.
At what point would that stop? Where you would stop using the canned response?
I don't know. I'm not there yet. Mine's 17.
I can't imagine it. Like, saying the exact same thing over and over again.
Oh, yes. Yes, you do.
Can you relate to an adult the same way? Yes. Your spouse talk to you that?
Yes. Yes, you can. Love and logic works on spouses. It can work. And it's not meant as an ugly, and that's where you have to be sarcastic. And you probably wouldn't, you know, it was so funny. I talked with my husband one time. We were talking about love and logic. And he's like, okay, and I'm trying to get him to understand because he just didn't do that. And we were having people over for dinner, like 20 or 30 people for dinner. Of course, everything in the house needed to be done. He felt the need to go organize his toolbox. Don't ask me why. It was just a man thing. In his mind, the garage needed to be clean for 20 people to come to the house, not the garage to eat, the house. And so I was like, okay. He goes, I organized my toolbox. I said, honey, that's fantastic. I need you to take out the trash, and I need this. Which would you like to do first? He went and took out the trash, came back and did the other. He goes, wait a minute. Did you just use that love and logic on me? I said, oh, no, babe. No, I would never, would never do that. But both things got done. And again, it's not in a sarcastic, demeaning tone. It's very much in just factual, loving way. You can use this because all it really is getting the other person to think, and you're avoiding an argument. You can use this with people at your work. You can use this at people, difficult parents on cheerleading squads, soccer teams, anything like that. It will work with adults and children. It's just, the reason we're talking about using it with children is to get them to become thinking, responsible, self-controlling adults. And if we start down here, they get there.
I'm sure.
Right. Just using that. No, I didn't use that to him. And I just looked at him and I said, well, like I said, I use it with mine, and mine is either O-stars or I have three boys, so I just, dude, I don't know. And I mean, I'll say that to them all the time, and they're like,
oh. But is that empathy when you say dude?
You can say it that way. I mean, see, in those, that's the great part. You can use it in, yes, you can use it. Yeah, you can use it in an empathetic way, and just what you're doing is you're triggering them that you're not going to engage them. And it doesn't, the way I say it, it doesn't come across as sarcastic to them. They just know that they are going to, and you might have a couple one-liners that you choose from, but the point is when they're really little that you're getting them to understand as a trigger word. But developing empathy with it every time you say it, yes, that takes some practice on your part so that it does not turn into a sarcastic remark. But yes, even as teenagers, I do use it because they want to, as teenagers, to engage in an argument. That's just, I'm finding out what their favorite thing to do is, even much more when they were little. I want the car, I want this, I want to go, you know, here and here and here. And so, yeah, I do use it with them. And that what it just tells them is, she's not going to argue with me. And one of the one-liners that they have in the book is, I love you too much to argue. But I just want, what did I say? I love you too much. I know what you said, but I just, what did I say? And you just, they have to go through the whole process of the argument in their head, but it does shrink. And to the point of, he's not going to argue with me, okay. But I see what you're saying, but if you try it, it does work. And yes, it does work with teenagers as well. It does. And it... Yes. That is a trigger to them to say, I'm not engaging you in an argument. When you're calm, let's talk about why you don't get the car to go to this person's house. Let's talk about this, but we're not going to fight about this. And so we can have discussion at that point. You can if they're not angry, then yes, you can say, you could say your one liner or whatever where they have learned because they've grown up with it to say, she's not going to argue. Okay, now can we talk about why I can't do this or why this won't happen? So you can do that and then you can have a discussion, but that pretty much triggers them. Mom's not giving in, dad's not giving in. Okay, I know that if I whine and throw a fit, we're not getting anywhere. So the argument is not going to happen because you just told them because of your empathetic one-liner, and now we can have a discussion as two people, two adults. So, yes.
I think it's not just statement.
Mm-hmm. To an aggressive statement. And then you can give them, you know, ideas of, would you like some, I've seen this before, would you like some ideas of things I've seen work out in the past? And, you know, no, I'm going to figure it out on my own. Okay, I'm here if you need me. You know, it just depends on the age of your child and where they are. But, yes, you can use it, but I see what you're saying, and it could be come across as just an automatic response and you really don't have any empathy. But that's where you have to take the time to make the effort to really, it's got to sound empathetic. I mean, you've got to sound like, you know, you could turn the same sentence into many different emotions just depending on how and the tone of your voice and how you say it. So you just have to use that empathetic tone. But your body language needs to reflect empathy as well, your nonverbal, as much as your tone of your voice. Did someone else have one over here? Yeah, he ended up getting grounded for a month. But he learned his lesson. And we haven't done it again, so that's a good thing. But guys, next week is the different types of parents, three different basic types of parents. Each one of them will teach something. Two of them are not really the goal that you intend to be taught to your parent, to your children. It might have been what's done to you. It may have been the style of parenting that you've learned from, but you as a parent have an opportunity to make a different choice, a different pattern to follow. But we're going to talk about the different types of parenting styles next week.